A noreira mako e tēmata a tātou, nei hui. A noreira tēnā tātou, i runga i te kaupapa i whakapaiti nei tātou i tēnei wā. Hei tēmata a tātou nei a hui, tēnei karakia mā tātou. Hei tēmata. E tau nei ki runga i a tātou katoa te wairua nā mātua tūpuna, nā rātou i whakatakoto te arahei hi koe nā mā tātou nā uri. I whakatoa ki a tātou nākau ki ngā tikanga hei arataki a tātou, kia nākau nui ki te hāpai a tātou mahi katoa, i roto i te pono, i te tika, i te maramatanga. Me te aroha anō tētahi ki tētahi ko e rā e rongo, whakaere ake ki runga kia tīna.
Tīna.
Haumi e hui e.
Tāi e.
Nō reira tēnā tātou. Tēnā tātou i runga kaupapi whakawhaiti nei mātou tātou i tēnei wā. Kia koutou, ko tai tawhiti mai, nau mai, hara mai, whakatau mai. Ki runga i tēnei parirau o te Atiawa, o te iwi kāinga. Nō reira, ki roto nei ngā iwi o waho, e noho nei, nō reira nau mai, hara mai, whakatau mai. Nau mai, mauria mai i o tātou tini aitua, e kore rātou, e wareware tia. Koe nei mātou, i nā tapu wai o rātou mā. Nō reira, e kore rātou, e ware ware tia, e nā mate, haere, haere, haere atira. Koe nei hoki te wā te mātahi o te tau. Te wā o Matariki, te wā e arake a Matariki. Nō reira, ka huri nā whakaaro anō ki a rātou mā. Ka huri nā whakaaro ki mua hoki, me o mātou tūmanako e hihia e mātou i tēnei wā. Nō reira, kāre ro te kōrero, te mea nui, ko tai mai, tātou, i runga te kaupapa, i tēnei wā, waiho mā rātou, te kōrero hia, e ngā kōrero i tēnei wā. Nō reira, huri noa, huri noa, huri noa, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, a tēnā tātou katoa. Ka huri au ki te reo pihikete. Welcome everyone. I won't say much more. I'll leave it to our distinguished guests to talk about the kaupapa this afternoon. But to give me a chance to settle down, I think it'll be a good idea to have a little bit of a waiata, because I know I've got a few people here that can help with that waiata. So, and I've just raced to get the guitar, so I'm going to play it now anyway. So, kapai.
Kia mau ki nā ki utara, It is my absolute honour in which to help facilitate with Drew this afternoon. We are in the presence of incredible icons within the audience and on our panel. For our whakawhanaungatanga for this session, I want you all to step up, meet someone in the room you do not know, introduce yourself, say your name, and share with them what brings you to this space today. We will give you 2 whole minutes to do this. Go! Kia ora te whānau. Thank you for making time to connect with those who are in the room. Over to you, Julie.
So, yeah, thank you for that. And there will be time at the end of today's session to connect again. Kia ora everyone, I'm Drew, as V has mentioned. A brief run-through. We're going to hear from some of our icons here today. We're going to listen to them share their memories, stories of Auntie Chrissy and of the Evergreen. And there will be toasties and special coffees. Then after that, we will go up to level 2 where the sign that used to be outside the Evergreen is exhibited here. And we'll remember those who've passed together up there, and then we'll come back downstairs. Kevin will close off for us, and for people that want to talk to your new friends some more or just ask some questions or perhaps share your own memories, there'll be a space for that, and Leilani will project an awesome slideshow here on the back wall, so we'll turn the chairs around. But yeah, just welcome. It's great to see so many faces from the past. It's also neat to see some rangatahi here, and it's neat to see people who will just potentially be hearing some of the stories of Auntie Chrissy, who's so special to so many of us for the first time. So welcome.
Kia ora, my name's Kaylee Rian. I'm from the later period of Evergreen. For those who are familiar with Evergreen, it spans about 60 years. As I understand, when I saw it come out and got involved with Evergreen and what was going on, the year I come out, I discovered that Evergreen area was taking place when I was born up north. And that was, yes, 60 years ago. But I'd just like to thank some people who have travelled from far away, and we have got someone here who is like from the beginning, so that kōrero will evolve eventually and give you all a background. But yeah, our kōrero is about our time, how our community was, the trans community, what have you, sex workers, etc. But yeah, so thank you.
Thank you, Kayla.
Welcome.
Kia ora everyone, kia ora nei tuku nua, wunga tuku hununu, tuku iwi. Yeah, I'm just here to celebrate the memories of Chrissy and Evergreen and share our stories with you, so kia ora.
Kia ora koutou, ko te is kūpa tuku ingoa, ngā tuku hununu tuku iwi. 1983, when I first arrived on the scene, there were still things happening, but there was a long way to go, and we'll cover that once we get into the kōrero. So, kia ora.
Kia ora koutou. Nau mai, haramai. Kā raua te taimai ki konei i tēnei rā te kitea ki a koutou. So, just a little bit of English translate that. Kia ora, I'm also from Kahungungu. And on my mum's side, I'm Ngai Tāmanuhiri from the Gisborne Harbour. It's wonderful to be here today. I look so forward to and seeing people like you, Jackie. You're an icon of my era. So kia ora, Jackie, for coming. And to all of you, Joe Chanel, too many of you to single out, but now I love you. I always love you. Kia ora.
Kia ora koutou, kua taimane i tēnei wā, a ki te tautoko te kaugapa ki rongu i tēnei rā, tino whakahirahira. Ko wai ahau, my name is Chanel Hati, and I am of Ngāpuhi descent. On my dad's side, on my mum's side, I'm Ngāti Tū Wharetoa. And I'm really honoured to be here today and to see faces I haven't seen for a while, and young faces, which is really, really, really nice for me because, you know, young people want to know what it was like back in the day, and it wasn't easy, but we're going to let you know those that kōrero. So, like you said, sis, it's really nice to see you here, Jackie. You really are truly an icon. Ngā mihi nui kia kaita katoa, nō reira tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā tātou katoa. Kia
ora. I'm feeling that we need to invite Jackie into this space. Jackie, if you don't mind, and if you're... I would like to vacate my seat, and I'll just take a side seat. If you would like to please join our panel, I feel you've got so many great stories in which to share. Thank you.
Let's introduce yourself, Jackie.
Kia ora, I'm Jackie Grant, Ngāti Pākehā from Hokitika. And I guess I came on the scene in Wellington about 1962, 63 when I met Chris. So I've sort of been around on the fringes ever since.
Beautiful. I'm just going to go a bit further with that, Jackie. In 1962, take us through the streets of Wellington. What did Cuba Street look like? What did Vivian Street look like? And what were we wearing?
Well, I can answer the wearing question. We were wearing very little on the Royal. But 1962, 63... it didn't look a lot different. The cars went up Cuba Street. It was a very free, open place. I came from Australia with three other trans, or queens as we called ourselves in those days. And for us it was total freedom. The only gay club that was going back then was probably the Purple Onion was the first one. Which started off as a drag club and then turned into a strip club. And Passy, who owned it, is still around in Wellington, so, you know, we're all still around. But the street didn't look a lot different. Little shops, boutique-type shops. People dressed not a lot differently. Wellington's always been sort of fairly easy on the dress sense, I guess. High fashion was never its forte, except for the glamour queens that were in the shows, that were in the clubs and things later on. We always tried to look a bit better than everyone else, I guess.
Can you tell us about the first time you met Chrissy and your first experience to meet your big one?
Well, first time I met Chris was at the Bistro Bar, and I don't know if any of you know where the Bistro Bar was, but it was the Royal Oak Hotel, and on the corner, what's the street that the Royal Oak was on?
Dixon
Street. There was the Meats Jewellers on the front. Then you came along Dixon Street a bit and you got into the Tavern Bar, which was a gay bar,
It wasn't advertised as a gay bar, but it was. And two barmen there back in the 60s were Claude and Emre Toft. They ran that bar. And then you went into the, I don't know how you would describe it, like a barn. It was huge. It went virtually half the block of Dixon Street right down to Pigeon Park. And it was called the Bistro Bar. And the Queen's Room one spot, the Ship Moles were in another spot, the Hookers were in another spot, the Woods were in another spot.
Yeah.
The gays were in the tavern bar and they'd sort of saunter through every now and then and have a look at what trade they could find. And it was just this huge melting pot of different people. There was the Ship Mole girls with Gwen and Sonia and all her lot, and then there was Chris and her lot. Anyway, I'd got into there. I'd not long been got here from Australia and sort of trying to find my feet. And when I met Chris, well, I'd seen them in the bar, and I'd heard, I think Tarpany was there at that time. You could hear her, you didn't see her, but you sort of heard her beforehand. And I was out waiting for a taxi to go back to where I was staying, and Chris was there, and she said, "Oh, you're one of the Australian queens, aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Oh, come with us, we're going to a party." So off we went to Geraldine's house, and that was where I met Geraldine, Jerry Shepherd. And we had Boil Up, and the guitars were out. And coming from Australia and totally different culture, I'd never seen any of this. And I was just absolutely fascinated with it, and I loved the guy. You know, I went back to Geraldine's many, many times for that pot. And the pot was, in those days, we were a community, and it's all way pre-law reform and all those sort of times. So we had to be a community because it was sort of them against us, but it was more probably us against them than them against us when you really boil it right down. But we had a community and we all had each other's backs and looked after each other, and I think we've lost that these days. But yeah, that was sort of early Wellington, and I'm sure people will get into more things. But
thank you, Jackie. Should we maybe start here?
I was happy to be last.
Okay, there's a real session for us. Perhaps, Chanel, you could talk to us about when you first met Chrissy, how the Evergreen was so important, any of your memories and stories you want.
Well, I think the Evergreen, which is when I came here, but there was also Carmen's Coffee Bar, which is the era before I came here, and these places are really important because they function really as safe spaces, you know. And when I came here, it was you know, we being trans, the girls were all out on the street, and you know, you'll find that anywhere where there are sex workers, there's always a little space for them to go when times get tough and people get too torturous. And the Evergreen was like that. So, it was a safe space for us. And Chrissy was, she was nice, but she was strict. She was strict. Don't go there with her. But respect her and there were a few times I saw her toss people out and sisters that were being naughty. But you know, and saying that in those days you had to be your own security because the police weren't there, and you know, and you had to just take care of your space and you know, just let people know, especially the girls, this is for you, you know. This is your space. Don't disrespect it, or you're not coming back in.
Yes.
And there were a lot of good times I remember in there. I remember it functioned as early in the evening. It functioned for the boys and the girls, so they had it in the evenings. And then as it got later and later, it would be a safe space for this, for all the girls out on the streets to come in and have a coffee when you know, because there were really torturous people out there, and you just wanted to just get away from there. And you know, the reason that we all, that most of us girls came to Wellington, well, I know certainly for myself, is that when you come from a very conservative place, you're looking for like-minded people, you know. And I think it's same for the boys, you know. You come to a place where it's a lot more acceptable, and that's why I came to Wellington, and I fell in love with the place, and just the people. The people, how kind the people were compared to Auckland and the other places that I came from. I mean, in Auckland, they had coffee bars. They had one called the Kadora. The Kadora that the trans girls would go to, and that was, it didn't have the same feeling as the coffee bar that Chris had. It was just a coffee bar. But, the police always had access to that, to the girls, you know, coming, and they would just all disappear and take off to the toilets and change their clothes, and it was quite scary times back there. And I remember Chris had a few functions in her coffee bar. I remember when she had her 50th birthday at the Majestic, well deserved, of course, because when Carmen left for Australia, her coffee bar was in exactly the same place. So it was like one girl was leaving and then another one was coming in to cater to the next generation that were coming, you know. And the Evergreen lasted for 25 good years, and had some really, really good times in there with you know, and the people that worked there, like Dears, you know Dears, you know, you'd go in there and there was always a smile, and the smile. Rosa Patterson, it was another one that worked in there. She was, you know, just a place where you could feel at home. Feel at home in a world where everything was, even for the boys, illegal. You know, and I can understand how living in the 70s, you know, and Jackie's talking about where in that time you had to conform to a standard. And if you didn't, you know, like for Carmen, for example, you were stigmatized, discriminated. And yet Carmen, she took all that with a smile, you know. And but that was that era. And then Chris came along, but she was a little bit different. Chris, she had a whole new style about her. And I just found her. And it was really sad when she passed away, because the Evergreen would never, ever be the same, even if somebody took it. That whole atmosphere was gone. But just to know that there was a safe space for us. And today, with the young people, you know, with the creation of technology, people don't seem to talk face to face. It's always online. And I think that's what made us tighten those days, is that we always saw each other. We didn't have phones and you know, texting and all that kind of thing. And I think that's what made everything tighter back in those days. Not saying that it does today, but that's the language of young people today. It's all about online, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I think these young people are wonderful today. They're sharp, you know. They're very driven, and you know, and in a world where it's free, but you're still on your guard, is good. It's good, because back in our days, we just had to take what comes. And that was that. But everybody has rights these days, so it's a lot easier. But I wish we had a coffee bar for today. And I would love to see what that would look like with all the young people. It would be great. So thank you.
Drew, can I just pick up on what Chanel said was about style? And back when I first met Chris, and Gay will know what I'm going to talk about, Chris was so out there, it just wasn't funny. And you know, early 1960s, Chris had bleached white, this is a Maori boy, bleached white hair, a very feminine sort of top on. This is the first time I ever met her. Tights, sort of stocking tights. She was dressed as a boy. She wasn't in drag. in the 1960s. That was outrageous. And a Gladstone bag under her arm. And you know where she worked? On the bloody wharf. She worked on the wharf as a cook in the kitchens on the wharf. And her friend Karina, who was also dressed very similar, wasn't she? And, you know, Chris said to me, oh, this is my friend Karina, she plays rugby, you know, we work on the wharf. But that, they were so out there and so outrageous, and nobody really cared. She just had that personality, but she was out before out was fashionable, that's for sure.
Des, I'm going to ask you a question. If you can take our audience through what the Evergreen Coffee House looked like, because for all of us who've been in this place, had coffees, had toasted sandwiches, had other things, we all know that whole space, right? From the beginning to the toilets to the jukebox. So for everybody who's not been in that cafe, can you take them through the decor?
Well, getting in through the door was the first trick. There used to be a little wee seat, and it was a double lock, and you would have to pull the grid back.
Little window.
$5. No money, no joy. And that is what the security had to be. We were a business, first of all, and then just the community and everything that was supported. So you'd come in through the door, that would be locked, and there'd be a little wee area where a heater would be. And then on the first table on your right in the window, and it was a huge window, literally from about 4 feet off the thing right to the ceiling. And you could see out onto the park, you could see down the road, you could watch people come back. For those who were looking for clients, yes, they would they would go by. And everybody would be looking in because the milieu and the people that were there were just so interesting. There wasn't a night that went by that there wasn't something that caught your eye. And then we come through into another area. There were two more seating arrangements before you got to the bar. And there were mirrors strategically placed. I didn't need eyes in the back of my head. You could look straight ahead down to the toilet and know exactly what was going on in that corner and that corner at the same time. It was really well, kind of decor was, oh, well, eclectic. I think that would be the word. It was just a real shock to the sense for the first time when you walked in. Yeah. And then when you thought you'd be used to that, you get your coffee, sandwich, and then you walk through into the back. And as you go through the door, you walk into a little wee space, and then you open up the back door, and it was a totally different scene altogether. Black light, so neons and everything, the bright lights and everything would be going on, the posters that had been put up around, advertising different kinds of events and venues over the seasons that had been through there. And then the back bar came around and there was a bit of a podium you stepped up onto.
Yes,
and there was trellising. And once again, wall of mirrors. So from the back you could see the front and from the front you could see the back. It was all about keeping people safe, being aware. Oh yeah, that one's had a bit too much to drink. Oh look out, that one's going to roll over there. This one's up to a bit in there. But you did it in such a way that you weren't walking over people's mama. It was there and it was really inclusive for the time, really ahead of it. And it was just amazing to just see people come in and they'd sit at the bar and they'd start talking and of course I'd start pouring. And the more I poured, the more they talked. So hey, I'm on a win-win here. what else was there? Oh, out the back.
The collages.
Private little tables.
Well, yes, little private tables, and they were sort of raised in one area, so it would block off down the back. And then you could go down and around and then past the jukebox and then into the toilets. Just amazing. And, of course, there were the exits, which later on became pretty well used. So we would lock off the front of the street, and if there were any problems, then we could get people out and lock the problem in, should there be any cause to do that. So it was Yeah, very, very interesting kind of thing. And it never changed. It was almost like it was stuck in time, and yet it was still very relevant, progressive and relevant. Yeah, it was like ageless. Yeah.
And intimate, that was amazing.
Yeah. Sympathetic lighting until 6 in the morning. Yeah, then everybody had Scarpa.
Where's the taxi?
So lots of wonderful times. When I look
can
at
tell
it.
Us about the first time you met Chrissy.
Well, yes. The first time I met Chris, actually, Chris walked in. I was working with Rosa as an exotic dancer. Yeah, no, not a male stripper. I was an exotic dancer. And Chris had made a comment because a few of the older school queens had come through and they were all testing me out. What's the meter of this person? Oh, that's not a bro. She's a girl. Look at the way she swings those hips. This is the quiet here. I'm trying to focus on getting some kind of be there. And Chris made an inquiry to Rosa, and then Rosa introduced me, and then slowly but surely I went through that one. And to this day, I still don't know what it was that Chris saw in me. Yeah, it was just one of those unspoken things.
Potential, it was called.
It was just one of those things. Yep, we clicked. And that was the beginning of a lifetime professional working relationship. And then later on, it became more in becoming integrated into the family and working with the community. And so the Kahununi connection for the coast and everything was always through. We would go through and support however we could on the marae. So you'd have all the girls out one corner cracking it and everybody else out the corner doing something else. The money would come in, we're on the road. And then 6 o'clock on the marae, we'd just put the koha down. And as soon as Chris would arrive, and it didn't matter where she went, she was known. It was amazing. They just take one person and could fuck up the through to anyone and everybody. Very, very acute mind when it came to the knowledge and the history of the backgrounds. And I think that was something that drew me closer to Chris, because having been adopted out of Māoridom and acculturalised and brought up with European family, I didn't have any understanding of the reo. I knew nothing of Te Kau Māori. And it's not too late, you young ones. You can get to be 56 and still learn. Yeah. So it's that was the kind of thing of how I met Chris.
Yeah. Kia ora, Des. Renee.
Kia ora, Renee. Well, when I first met Chris, she asked me where I was from. I went, "Ngāti Kahununi," and she goes, "Oh, not another smart mouth." And I'm going, "Oh, hell, it's not my fault you look like Paddington Bear." But we clicked straight away in that. And,
yeah.
How I looked at Chris, to her, to me, she was my matriarch in that, because, you know, I missed Carmen's era. I just caught the farewell party for Carmen, and that was it, sort of thing. But Chris was always here. And I come down. And so she was my matriarch, and I really loved Eva Green, because whenever they did a bust on the streets and that, I used to just go and sit in Eva Green, sit in the corner there by the window and do my business there. And just stick to the regulars, because I was too scared the others might be undercover cops. And but yeah, it was a really, really cool place to go to, and I think we were just one big whānau there. And that, you know, and it was such a safe haven for us, and saw a lot of things there. So a lot of things happened, but you never did in front of Chris. And you go, and the next night you go out and you knock on the door. Am I allowed in? How long my bath for? But she was really, really cool to us, and if you ever needed help, you just had to go to Chris. You know, she was always there for you and that, and that's why I looked so highly up to her, and that I just thought she was an amazing person, and what she did for us, and then, like, given us that safe place, and yeah, I think that was amazing. If it wasn't for her, we wouldn't have nothing, you know. So she did a lot of things for us.
Do you remember when you first met Aunty Christy?
Yeah, I told you.
Oh, did you? I'm glad everyone's listening.
Have another smoke.
Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry for that. Okay. I'll just like sit here and blush for a little while. Okay. How about we move on to Kayla then, eh? Kayla, no one's asked you yet. Do you remember when you met Aunty Chrissy?
Yeah. When I first met Chrissy, it was by coincidence because I was involved with something else, and this is, well, you know, since, well, outside of the family, kicked out, disowned, all that kaka. So when I got to Wellington, they were telling me about this place. And they said, oh, these people here, and they were these amazing outfits. I said, oh, I really don't want to be the crowd of women. Oh, not that kind. But anyway, I went down there, and the nightlife area, that's what they called it, and the evergreen. They said, you've got to go there first. So I walked in the door, and yes, I do remember that. You walked in the door, the table here, raised one there, one there, and the counter was here, where Des would be serving the coffee, taking orders, etc. And I walked in, and Chrissy was there sitting in the seat, like this. Are you new? Hi. Yeah. But, like with Renee, we kind of, initial quarter, we clicked, and she was like, she knew everything about what the girls do. Just been welcoming. She was very welcoming, you know, very accommodating. Yeah, I actually have been barred from there. I think I was drunk because I can't remember. But to me, I had a different view of the whole place after like going there for so many years. It's like walk in and sit down, cup of tea. I would sit there, do my work, go out on the rori. The whole area, Evergreen was like the central part. You'd go in there first, then you'd go out. But see, they have Marion Street, and now that Marion Street's got all these apartment buildings. But before then, before they built them, there was an empty car park. And on the other side in Cuba Street was a Sunset Strip nightclub upstairs. They'd play the music so loud. We'd be sitting there in Marion Street. We have our own nightclub in the street there, and we'd have some girls doing the poi, entertainment. We have some of the girls who sung a cappella.
Mariah.
Yeah.
Isn't it Mariah?
There's the Mariah.
Joe
Chanel. Ms. Joe Chanel.
Serena when she was drunk.
Serena.
Chora.
But I mean, that was community, and it was like the people on the outside could see what we have. Mm. I don't understand. But as Chanel said, like, they were tortuous people. The longer I was out there on the area, it progressed, then we had gangs coming. Mm. But we had learned how to be ourselves, stand up. By going to Evergreen, seeing how things work there, and, you know, chats with Chrissy and that, and, like, you'd have a staunch gang member on one hand, yeah, and a person working, what do you think would happen? No, we'd stand up, you have to stand up. So, and Chanel was right about the police, they'd, like, turn a blind eye, or pick on you. But we did later on in the years have two constables. They were actually quite nice, like around Christmas time, I'd see you walking. Have you cracked your jet?
No.
Oh, well, there's a cloud down the road for you. No. Yeah, they're actually sociable. But when Evergreen evolved through to what, as I said before, I was in the later stage, and it just became natural, and then We had the gay community moving in off the bar they set up, etc. I initially come out to Wellington, and there's a place called the Dorian Society, for those who go back there. And that was up one part. And then they had Auckland clubs come down, like Alfie's and Bojangles, what have you. And the funny thing is, they were like, oh, this is our club, blah, blah, you're a visitor. Yeah, really? We go to every, and guess who would turn up there late at night? Everyone from those clubs that stop in there. And it's just sociable. And in regards to early morning lighting, once or twice I remember that place closing about 8 o'clock in the morning. It's just like, oh yeah, lock the door, sit in the back. But it was good. The front part was coffee and sort of business. Back part was socialising, and there's certain ladies you knew not to avoid, because once they'd start, you have to sit there and listen. But that's why she got a sense of family, and from that I learned to stand up to my family. They knew what I was doing, and they'll put me down as they did. And it's like, yeah, I don't guess you pay for this for you, and that. It's like, you say, just try and normalise. But the good thing that came out of it from the girls is that we didn't go downhill, we went uphill. We work in offices, we do this and that. So we blended, yeah. But the Evergreen, yeah, it's one of those things, it's like a steep thing to break. Always be there. And Chrissy was, yeah, I was at her 50th. That was funny. Because I do catering, so I was in the kitchen passing a tray around, and because I'm 6 foot something. And there's security downstairs, so she said, make sure they have something to eat. So I come out, and there was a big crowd of people going like this. All these people about this high, say, and I was like this, and the tray was up there. I was like, ha-ha. I went right downstairs and come back, and but, you know, it was good. And the girls got together. They had a couple of haka group there performed. Chrissy was there, regal as in her throne. But, you know, it was beautiful. And good, yeah, like, when you sit down and think about it, really emotional memories from that place. And, yeah, not covering it, but, yeah, the fights, arguments, gang members, the abuse, hidings, yeah, socialising, yeah, being drunk. But, yeah, no, but it was their place. I mean, it's so good. I can visualise the entire layout. That's so good. So it must have made an impression on me. Yeah.
Gay. Would love to hear your recollections of Chrissy, your time at the Evergreen, and also what was your favourite song on the jukebox?
Oh, White A Shade of Pale.
Oh. Tell us about Evergreen and Chrissy.
Chrissy, as you fellas call her, is my relation. And I first met her in Hastings. Her brother comes into a pub I'm drinking at the age of 15. I've just left school. And he goes, you're like my brother. Come with me, I'll take you home to meet them. They've just come out. When we got to their place, she wasn't there. Her and Ella had come from Wellington. So I met her mum. And then her mum, knowing our relationship, oh, you're coming to work for me. And that's how I got to know Chris. Initially when the Evergreen opened, it was after Carmen had given up the lease. And it opened as the Owl's Retreat. That was the name Carmen had on it. And me and four friends were the little hoots in the Owl's Retreat. So we gathered together to support her. She'd rung me to come down from Hastings to open it for her. She still had a contract with Doug and Sue Timms at the Sunset Strip in Cuba Street. Yeah, so she had a year left on her contract. So I came down, gathered Ella Wilson, who is also from Hastings, Geraldine Shepherd, It was Pat Lambert at first, and then we were joined by Kay from Porirua. I can't remember Kay's name.
Little Kay.
Yeah. And so that was our staff, and Serena came in during the day to clean the window. It was the most important thing to everyone in there. Yeah, and the mirrors. And they were spotless. If you knew Serena, she spent two or three hours just rubbing those mirrors down with newspaper to get them sparkling clean. Yeah. And they were well used. All the queens came in, and that's the first place they headed to, checking their makeup, checking their hair. You'll see me doing that now. I'm still in that habit, you know. So that was the evergreen and how we started out. After a year, Chris got released from her contract and then came in. In the meantime, we were renovating it. We had a Sio Falaua. Falaua. He was our carpenter.
Oh, Sio, yes.
And Sio built the tables up, the mezzanine floors, both upstairs and downstairs, and did all the renovations in the club to change it. And we opened with the coffee bar only at first, and there was a narrow alleyway with all this walled-off space to go, to allow people to go down to the toilets. But that's how we started. And of course us, being friends and family, we were volunteers. For that whole year, we remained as volunteers. We didn't get paid because we were trying to build the club up. And we were all working girls. Say, we built the business up at the same time. Eh? We opened the front window up and clients went past and see us sitting there, they started coming in. And that attracted other working girls and the working to come in. And that's how the business built up over that year. By the time Chris came in, it was already a thriving business. Yeah. Some beautiful memories, some beautiful people. Yeah, and you take the good with the bad, And us Hastings girls, we're fighters, We come from Hastings when the mongrel mob was emerging in Hastings, and we had to fight our way to be accepted in Hastings. So we hit Wellington with that attitude as well. Yeah. Me, I call the cabs. I go, excuse me, I've called your cab. Are you ready to go? It's either the cab or the police, one of the two. I'm not a bouncer. So that's how we started off. And along the way we got joined by Eunice and Violet and Hila did a stint, and I think even you've come in and helped out at times, Gemma. And great to have you here, Jackie, because Chris and I both worked for you in Willis Street. Yeah. I did a stint at the restaurant, but I wasn't a waitress. Great. So it's good to have you here, Jackie. Some great memories, and you're able to share that era with everyone here.
What was really interesting was Chris had an incredible work ethic.
Yeah.
And I think that rubbed off on a lot of other people along the way. She always had a job, and she said to me once, I don't care what I'm doing, as long as someone's paying me, I'll wash their dishes, I don't mind. I'm not out for the limelight, but she always, always had a job, always worked.
And when I came down, they were on the wharf, and they were all in the kitchen down, just past down here, further. There was Ella, Kapuni, Chris,
Karina,
and Rose.
That's right.
Yeah. So they all worked down here. Ella used to pack this sort of, oh, I thought it was a go-kart, and used to carry the food trays around to all the different areas on the wharf, and you daren't get in her way because she never slowed down. That was an era. We were lucky that Wellington was so close, eh? This is a beautiful city because everything is so close. It's unlike Auckland where you go miles to get across the city. Yeah. So Wellington being compact, we had this club circuit going around at one stage when Downtown was going, Powderpuff was going. Those were all those clubs in that era. Yeah, and people got to know Tater Tate and all of that. And throughout the night, we wandered from club to club, yeah. And so when one opened as the late-nighter or early-morninger, everyone ended up there from all those clubs, yeah. And the club owners got on, eh, Jackie?
Yeah.
There was a need to be able to, as a community, support one another. Yeah. So that's what happened.
And the midnight movies on Sundays.
Yes. Rats running across the balustrade.
Oh, the Roxy Theatre.
Des, could you tell us about special coffee? So people are hearing about coffees and toasted sandwiches. So for those who have never been to the Evergreen, tell us the ingredients of a coffee.
Okay, cats out of the bag, people. Special coffees. This is back in the days before they had 24-hour liquor licensing. 6 o'clock's, well, so you get all the wharfs and all the bars and clubs in town shutting, and it was after that either get to a speakeasy or go to another supply or have your own supply at home. And the special coffees were traditionally poured out of a crystal egg cup. Chris was pretty onto it. She could tell within a drop whether or not you'd free poured or not. I soon learned how to free pour because of the way everything was happening. It was Grant's whiskey that was used, so I'm not too sure if that's any kind of thing. And
a lot of homebrew too, tell the truth.
Well, that was later on in history, much later. Yeah, so getting all of that kind of thing going, there was another little venture that we opened up, and that was the Nutcracker Suite, which is now Valhalla, I think it is.
Yeah.
And that was an amazing venue. So very much we had a nice little wee coffee shop going on here, the regulars and everybody was in one thing. And then when the Nutcrackers opened, well, it just took off. And from there we were able to get hold of low calorie beer. So for the beer drinkers coming in, at least they were still getting a taste. But there was always the special on the side. And then we moved from just whiskey, we had vodka, we had gin, bourbon, whatever was required. And it was how you poured the coffee. Teaspoon first, coffee. Alcohol first, alcoholic drink, not licensed. Teaspoon, alcohol, hot water, coffee. Special beverage, didn't need a license to sell it, and that was the loophole from long, long ago, right the way through until I think about the mid-90s when the laws, yeah, and that was how the empires were built here.
And that transferred over from when Chris and Christine ran the coffee bar at the Sorrento, after the Sorrento closed. Mm. They started serving the special coffees there.
I know that the Eagle Green had some of the best toasted sandwiches, and it became my favourite combination, and still is today. Mm. And it's a beautiful segue, because it is now time for...
Colour Careful Guy.
And then you all can join us to share in a special
while
coffee
on specials.
And a toast.
You know what? I've got one of her toasted sandwich machines at home.
Aww, that's amazing.
Yeah, hang on a sec. We're just going to do karakia before we get into the special coffee. So, Stephen, matariki te tīpua, matariki te tāpito, taumai te wairua, wainga I ra atua, pita I ra tangata, tīhei mauri o rea. Nau mai e ngā hua, o te wā o te ngākina, o te waitai, o te wai māli. Nā tāhe, nā rongo, nā haumie, nā tangaroa, nā ranginui e tū I hō nei, nā papatua nuku e tāpoto a kenei. Tūturu, whakamaua ki a tīna,
tīna,
haumie, huinie,
tāi kie.
Kōra lalāne.
Now, just before they start, I'm pastor, my name is pastor, and the Chris called me that the two guys are getting together, something to, you know, with Chris. You know. I met Chris and Carmen in those days, but I was passing that on the Purple Onions.
Oh,
and all the over there, they all started a fight.
Yeah,
so I had
head.
A full draft show.
Yeah.
And those
had
of
my
yeah.
I just want to share something before. Before you can go and have a cup of drink there with a liquor. Well, I came from Samoa, and I didn't open anything. I worked at a tram in those days. This is during the 50s, you know. And then I danced rock and roll, you know, and I was the champion, Australasian champion, rock and roll dancing, you know, with my partner, Judy. And then I got married. Went to Australia, and for a while I met with these guys, and I work at Lay Girls. I work at Lay Girls at night time, doing drag at night, and daytime I work on the buses.
A foggy day in London town.
But you place your life. And everybody, when my son was born, my oldest son is 62 years old now. When he was born, then I gave it up and came back to New Zealand. And went to Samoa. My second son was born in Samoa. Then we came back to Wellington. And then I decided, I'm going to open, because I work at the Purple Island in Sydney too before. Those days I was slim and beautiful. Because I'm 88 years old now. So I'm older than most of these ones over here, I think. Anyway, I opened the club Purple Onion, and I brought a show. I brought most of the drag queens that I brought. They're all very well known in Australia, beautiful. Lila Hayes, Holly Brown, they all came down and they worked at my club. And I met Carmen, because Carmen was working in the coffee lounge. I think she was a waitress in this coffee place and working at the hospital. She was, anyway, she was young. She was a boy then, those days. So anyway, used to make me laugh at Carmen when she said, oh, tell me, the guys were sitting over there. I said, oh, what's your name, honey? You look so good. I said, my name is Carmen. She said, Carmen. That's how Carmen goes, you know. And I said, but Carmen who? I said, Carmen get it. And I've never forgotten that, you know. She's always been a friend of mine. She used to come, when I opened the Onion, Carmen used to come, before she opened, her places were way after mine. But they all come around there. And I met Chris, too, in those days. But Chris, I think, Chris works more with the gay community, the Rainbows community. Yeah. Chris did more for that than Carmen. Carmen was always in the paper. she's a queen, a news queen. She always gets into the paper. But anyway, she came and have coffees, serve coffees and drinks, hot drinks at my place, you know. Because in those days, the drag show was going very well at first to start off. And then most of the gay community didn't like the queens to dress up in girls' clothes. They didn't like it because they were all closet queens in those days. They used to ride it outside of my place. And don't forget, I'm not a queen. So they ride it outside my place. Queers. And I was encouraging boys to become drag queens. That's what they say. They write down on it. So I changed it to girls, to change it to strippers. And they were, da, da, da. And then, of course, I got the strippers.
Still ain't quite.
It was fun. Well, she started, she knows. She, she was one of the old ones. She was there. But anyway, when I came, when, and then the club went on good, you know. And then there was a lot of drugs in those days, during the 60s and 70s. There was so much drugs going on. And my wife, Anita, and I was, she was dealing with a lot of drugs in those days. And I said, well, it's time for me back up the two younger kids, because Mark was already working. My Mark was, I don't know whether you folks know, Ray Johns used to run all of the clubs.
Dr. Johns.
And Mark, yeah, Dr. Yeah. Johns. And Mark was, Moondog Mark.
Yes, yes.
That's my son.
Yeah.
And then Mark was already working. So I took the two kids and went to America. I've always wanted to be in Hollywood. What a dump. And I got over there. And I lived over there for 32 years. Then I came back when my sister died. And the niece was here. You know Winnie Laban?
Yes.
She's my niece. She's my sister's daughter. And my other sister, my auntie's daughter, she's the Prime Minister of Samoa now, Philomena Taafa, you know. And my other niece, all the girls got good jobs except me, you know. I'm the one, the worldly one. My father always said, the Lord only takes good people first. And the rotten ones like you, you'll live forever. And sure enough, they all died before me. My parents died, my brothers and sisters. I have one sister in Auckland now. You got all my life story all in one time. But I had a good life, you know. I had a fabulous life. Really, I had, you know. And the gay communities over here were so good, you know. These were the old ones, I remember. I don't remember any of the young ones that had come out now. Of course, they weren't even around in those days when I was around. As you can see, you know, I'm 88. I'm 88 years old, you know, and I'm still kicking, you know. So anyway, I said, then I opened a club, and I opened another one in the house because all the girls were so popular. I made so much money on those girls, in those days. So I changed the club. The Purple Line was a strip club. And then I opened another one, Playgirls.
Tater Tate, where the Tater Tate was.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah. That's it. In Lower Hutt, I had a fight with the mayor over there. He said, I shouldn't be bringing a strip show over there. I said, excuse me, you're not allowed through the door. And then they all come, all the police and everybody come. In those days, too, we could sell, oh gosh, I used to make $500 on one bottle of whiskey, you know. I was with all the Japanese sailors. Oh, they love my whiskeys. And they love my girls because I married girls from what did you say? From Janice Moroni. And they're all from...
Janice
Moroni. Yeah, do you remember
Hastings.
Her? They're from Hastings. All from Hastings. And a lot of those girls, they had nowhere else to go. So I usually have Christmas. We're just like a family. All my strippers, we always have a barbecue together, and we go get mussels and paus and all that, and we all get together on Christmas days and things like that. They come to my house, you know, and stuff like that. They were good friends and all those years, you know. And I came back, I still remember by some of the few people that are still around, like Jackie and them. They said, Donald just died, and of course Jenny just died too.
Yeah.
But everyone of them have all gone. Oh, I remember her, that one over there. That girl from Otaki County. That woman from Otaki. She's still a friend. All the people, I used to see Carmen. I used to, when I come from America for a vacation, I used to stop by in Sydney to see my friends, a family there, because my wife is from over there. And I used to see Carmen, we always had a cup of tea together and talk. She had a little new flat. But Carmen wasn't all that bad. She was a good person.
I believe you have come into this space today to provide us with our next club, Uncle. Because, you know, what is clear about our corridor today is we need a space. It's missing in our community. And you are the man who's going to provide that for us. Everybody say aye. Aye. Thank you, Uncle Papi. Please have some toasted sandwiches and special coffee. We're going to have an intermittent. Take a break.
A lot of people that does this kind of thing. My niece, Winnie, was always with the gay community. she vote for all you guys?
Yes, she did.
And me, I'm just old. Excuse me. God bless. And I'm glad that I came. Anyway, Joe asked me to come.
He told me to holler.
Yes, I remember.
Gay,
yes, it's gay.
Oh, I want you to holler again.
How could I look over there twice a minute? I do that face. And then you'll get old, you'll forget me.
I know Luana.
My name is Fiona Lam Shang. We are on the second floor of the Wellington Museum, outside the Evergreen Coffee House sign.
And what a sign. It's all kind of illuminated, and then underneath it we've got some panels here.
Yes, these panels take us back to yesteryears. They're a collage of old pictures as well as business cards of establishments that were around in the 80s and 90s.
When you look through the panels, you see familiar faces?
Absolutely. In the panels are, it's a collage of my youth, actually, and a lot of icons of those people who used to be well-known on the Wellington streets within our community.
So how does it make you feel when you see those faces again?
I feel really humbled to have spent a youth time with them, and that I was exposed to great leaders at such a young age in a community that was accepting, inclusive, resilient, and even though they didn't realise it, activists in their own right, but created a space that was inclusive of all sexual preferences in a community that looked after each other just by default. I love that. I think we were lucky to live in a time where our communities were really important because the struggle was real. Our preferences were illegal, therefore we had to really look after each other. I think when I'm being reflective, though the times are hard, the community was strong. We don't quite have the same feel now because by rights, how we live, we have capacity, right? Everybody sees and recognises us. In the time when I was in my 20s, that was not so much the case. However, this community ensured that we had space and we had safe spaces in which to connect and meet other people.
One of the really lovely things for me today is looking at the audience and seeing there's such an age range in the audience, from the young to the older people. Isn't it just wonderful?
It really is, when this kind of kaupapa can bring through so much diversity and people who are just curious about Wellington's history. So the range of audience today has been quite nostalgic, has taken us out into the past, but it also makes us look into the future to see what our young people today have that's available for them to get this kind of connection and support.
What's been your favourite moment from today so far?
It's got to be all the stories of all of our people on our panel sharing of a time in the 60s, what that looked like for them, and even though it was hard, how much they enjoyed it. So it has been a walk into the past, but joyful, and has celebrated us and our community and where we are today.
My name's Jackie Grant, and we're at Wellington Museum, I think, aren't we?
Yes, and I'm Pasi Daniels. I'm from Wellington, but I'm Samoan anyway.
So we're here today remembering Chrissy and the Evergreen and all of those wonderful years. What is it like to be surrounded by so many people from the past?
It's quite amazing because it's, you know, we sort of go off on our own life journeys, and we don't have as much contact as we probably should. Although we see people on Facebook and that, but it's not like being in the same room.
Being together. It's not been so many people that we know, Jackie and I know, because they've all gone. Most of the people we know, first because I'm 88 years old, you know. That's the problem. But I don't know any of these, and yet I'm the one that started all that bullshit in New Zealand. I was the first club that opened New Zealand, was the Purple Onion. And apparently, the Evergreen was right next door to the Onion, isn't it?
The what? The Evergreen.
The Evergreen,
yeah.
Was right two doors up, yeah, from the Onion. I've closed already and took the kids and went to America. I took my two younger ones, and they work with Michael Jackson, Janet Jackson, Liza Minnelli. Well, my kids are working big time in America, you know. And then I decided to come back home when Amy died, Winnie's died. And it's nice to be here, you know. It's nice to be people that I love, that I grew up loving them, you know. But I was never, ever one of them that goes to the pubs and stuff like they do. I never do that, anyway.
What is your favorite memory of Chrissy and also Carmen?
My favorite memory of Carmen, she's always in a newspaper, she's always wetting her lips like this. All the time, you know. And she was always very, she's like, she doesn't give a damn about business. I mean, I think when she left the nightclub that she had, the strip club, you know, what you call that place? The balcony. When she left the balcony, she left with nothing. She had nothing to go. And all the other queens that were working for her, they all end up taking all the money, you know. That's the bad thing. I felt sorry for her for that, you know. But Chrissy is the one that takes all the things that to do with gays. Chrissy is the one that opens all the doors and everything
Chris
else.
Chris was never interested in the limelight and pizzazz and being the showgirl. She was sort of always just in the back being solid. And there was a lot of solid's not probably the word, but there was a lot of substance to Chris. Where some other people, well, there was a lot of show, but not the substance. Not the same substance. And I'm not trying to put anyone down. No. It's just the way it was.
I think Chrissy was the one that encouraged and go with all the gay crowd over here. She wasn't care about whatever it is. She knows she was a queen, but she backs them all up. You know, it's different. Comedy's for comedy, you know, but Chris was for the people. That's my idea of it. But Carmen, I love her, oh, please. She's a showgirl.
What are your favourite venues from Wellington in that era?
Well, I like Jackie's because I owned it. But we used to do the rounds, as someone said before. We used to go to the Sunset Strip. We used to go to the Powder Puff, which we called, of course, the Powder Puff. We went, and that's way after the Purple Onion in those days. I had Chris and I actually opened a restaurant opposite Parliament Buildings, which was the first
topless one.
The first topless restaurant in New Zealand was called the Doodle Inn. I think the SIS, thanks, darling. I think the SIS burnt us down at the end. But yeah, everyone used to go to the midnight movies on a Sunday night and then end up at the Hot Bread Shop at 4 o'clock in the morning. We were a community and we all sort of stuck together. And that was the important part. We all had each other's backs. And I don't know whether it's the same these days or not.
And so where was that first topless bar?
That was in 1967, 68.
and so it was opposite Parliament. Do you know which whereabouts? What street?
Molesworth Street. There was a fish and chip shop one side, and there was a grocer just up the road. It was right opposite the main gates of Parliament.
And how did people respond to that? If that was the first in New Zealand?
It was interesting. We got away with it because when we took it over, there was a permanent booking for the Round Table Association, I think they were called. It wasn't the Business Round Table, but it was a group of ministers from different denominations had a permanent booking there. So we didn't tell them, but we introduced the topless restaurants to them that night. And the police were going to bust us and everything, but if they had, they would have had to have busted the Bishop of Wellington and half the different clergy. So they let it go. But it only lasted about 6 months, and it mysteriously burnt down one night.
And what was it called?
The Doodle Inn.
Jackie, your name today, the Doodle Inn. I named the Purple Onion when I came back from over there. I work at the Onion in Sydney. Very famous one. All the shows there were fabulous, choreographed, proper drag queen show, good costumes. And same as I'd started with the Onion too. The girls were all wearing nice costumes. Then they go into Larrick and things and just get up with their dress they wear. and take it up. But those were those days, you know. Now it's now. But anyway, I came back to retire here. New Zealand is the best place to retire.
Absolutely. Today is a very special occasion, and they are serving toasty sandwiches and also special coffee. What's in the toasty sandwiches?
Mine's ham and egg, I think. Ham, egg and onion.
It's got onion and something sweet, pineapple.
And how would you rate these toasty sandwiches compared to, say, Carmen's? These are better.
Tasty, more tasty.
Did you know? Wrong. They've got it totally wrong.
What should be in there?
There should be three slices of bread to make the sandwich for a start. Always. Wellington toasted sandwiches had three slices of bread, butter on the outside, and then the filling and the two between the two lots of bread.
That sounds a meal.
They were like a meal. We lived on them at times. Hey, Des, I was just saying, he got it wrong. There's only two slices of bread. There's not three.
I'm not passing any critique on this.
Who made them?
Des must have made hundreds of thousands of toasted sandwiches at that coffee bar. He'd be the expert toasted sandwich maker in this country.
Des, how are the toasty sandwiches tasting?
They're tasting good. Yeah. And yes, it would have been nice if there'd been that extra in there, but when you have a legacy that goes, and over time people forget, yeah, that's why it's good to be able to come back and go, okay, we definitely need to have some kind of resurgence for what's going on to keep things going.
Thank you everybody for being with us in this space today. Thank you for remembering those who are not present with us, whether they have passed through or just cannot make it today. But just to close us off, let us say, Chrissy, we tōko three times in memory of someone who changed the landscape of Wellington for our community. For those who sit here who have changed the landscape for our community, may we always be resilient. May we always embrace each other and our journeys. So on the count of three, Chrissy, we took
off. Can we just add her life partner, Andrew, into that as well?
Well, I'd love to add Andrew, her life partner, into that. What is Andrew's surname?
Anaru.
Manuel. Well, why don't we just go Chrissy and Anaru three times in memory of their brilliance for our community. Together now, whānau. Chrissy and Anaru. Chrissy and Anaru. Chrissy and Anaru. Kia ora koutou, I'll hand it over to our brother, Kevin, to close us out with karakia. Thank you.
Tēnā tātou. Reka nā kōrero, ko kōrero here. Really awesome kōrero. Really awesome the legacy that still continues today, believe it or not, in terms of our whānau store. There are still places where we get together and where our whānau are the backbone of our community here in Pōneke. So, tuku ngā mihi ki a koutou katoa. Ki ngā kaiwhakahaere te tuatahi, ki ngā kaikōrero, ki te audience, tēnā tātou katoa. I'm going to actually ask a part of our whānau who don't know this to come up and sing a waiata, a happy waiata, and then I'll do a karakia straight after that. So our whānau from Te Whanawhana, and if you've got a poi and if you've got spare ones, come up. And I know you've got it, Renee, because you always have poi. Come up here. And we're going to do a waiata, which was composed to invite people to come to Pōneke, to come to Te Whanganui Atari. So.
We're going to do order to order. Come out. Orenga
ororo. Karangatia ki te tai pakarungara. Kia mama te ngākau te tino. Me te ara wairua o te tangata, ko e rā e rongo whakairi ake ki runga kia tina. Tina, haumie, huie, tāikie. Kia ora tātou.